Hello and welcome to On The Ledge podcast, the podcast for the people who like houseplants. And that's you, isn't it? Yes, I thought so. I'm your host, Jane Perrone. And in this week's show, we're talking cacti and succulents with a legendary nurseryman, Ulrich Hager of German cactus nursery, Cactine Hager. And I answer a question about a brutal chop to a Monstera Deliciosa. My hand is very sore right now. There are two reasons for that. Reason one, I have been writing hundreds, and I do mean hundreds, of cards to Patreon subscribers. If you're outside the UK, your card is at this moment in the post, if you're listening reasonably soon after publication, obviously. And if you are in the UK, I am still writing those cards. Obviously, they won't take as long to arrive, so they will go in the post this coming week. So, in other words, if you're a patron at the legend or superfan level, look out for your card. And if you get your card, please, please put it on social media and tell me how messy my handwriting is and how you can't read it because I have appalling handwriting. I should say that my daughter wrote the labels for the ones that had extra characters in it. So that's why the writing on the front of the card is neater than the writing inside. Second reason why I have a sore hand, I've been putting together a wardrobe for my son. Never let me buy flat pack furniture again, listeners. And my hand is really sore as a result. Thank you to my new patrons this week, Amanda, Monica, Riley H, hope I've said that right, and Carol, all became legends this week. So thank you, round of applause to you. And if you want to find out how to join the legend clan or the superfan clan or the crazy plant person clan of On The Ledge patronage, then check out the show notes at janeperrone.com. It's quite easy. You can choose to pay monthly or get a discount if you pay annually. And all the money that goes into that pot helps to support the show, paying for cool things like transcriptions and my assistant, Kelly. Some lovely feedback from the Laker episode. Thank you to Leon, long-term listener and indeed a plant science professional, for pointing out my mispronunciation of the word cat iron exchange. This is the problem when you spend all your time with your head in books and you never actually hear these words spoken. So I talked about cation exchange in relation to Laker, and I called it cation exchange, which is just how I thought it was pronounced, but it's not. It's cation. And Leon goes on to explain, it refers to positively charged ions like calcium and iron, atoms or molecules that have been stripped of electrons. These are in contrast to anions, which are negatively charged atoms or molecules in the soil, like sulfate, that has more electrons than protons. Thank you, Leon. I'm always learning and always happy to be corrected by those who know better. So thank you for that. And I shall now say cation exchange from now on. Thank you also to Asterisk, who put a comment on the show notes on my website, janeperrone.com. And Asterisk, that's literally what they call themselves, have said that they really recommend soaking Laker for a day before using it for the first time. I did talk about rinsing. They're suggesting soaking it for a whole day because that helps to get rid of more of that dust that gets lodged in all the pores. And Asterisk, you apologize for your wobbly English. Your English is perfect. I salute you as somebody with a smattering of Italian and very poor French after years of learning it at school. You're doing great. And Vivian got in touch from Calgary, Alberta. Oh, I bet it's chilly there right now. Lovely place, though. Asking about Laker, and Vivian is still confused. I'm sorry you're still confused, Vivian. So, yes, you're right. It has no nutritional value. Vivian is still confused about feeding processes for Laker. So if you're using it as your entire substitute for soil, so there's no soil involved, then yes, you're going to be required to add every single drop of nutrients that plant will need, and that includes the main three, nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium, but also the trace nutrients that are generally quite available in soil and therefore are often not added into houseplant fertilisers. Although, yeah, caveat to that, some of the more modern houseplant feeds are starting to introduce more of these trace nutrients. So what do you do? Well, what you need to look for, Vivian, is a hydroponic houseplant fertiliser. If you happen to have a grow shop or a hydroponic shop where you live, I would go there and ask for advice because they will be able to help you and negotiate the minefield that is feeds for hydroponic systems. There are so many different products out there. The main things you need to be looking for is that it's a feed that's for hydroponics. Now, some of the houseplant feeds that can be used on organic substrates can also be used on hydroponics. So I'm thinking in the UK of one called Liquid Gold Leaf. I'm sure there are others. Basically, read the small print on your label, see exactly what that feed is meant to cover. But you're looking for a feed that is something that you can easily dilute and that contains both the main three nutrients plus all the trace nutrients. Those should be listed on the label and you should be able to see exactly what you're getting. But yes, seek advice from your grow shop or hydroponics shop. But that's where to start, looking for that hydroponic feed and making sure that you are carefully monitoring what you're adding. I should do more on hydroponics. Let's schedule that in for 2022, shall we? But I hope that helps a little bit, Vivian. If you were to ask me about my happy place, it would probably be a toss-up between riding along a beach on a horse, not on a bicycle, or spending time in a big glass house looking at plants. Probably in my case, cacti and succulents. So I was delighted to welcome Ulrich Hager, I hope I've said that right, onto On The Ledge podcast, a fellow podcaster and the man in charge of the wonderful German cactus nursery, the oldest cactus nursery in the world, apparently, Kakteenhager. To start, I wanted to find out how this historic nursery began.
The cactus stuff is starting about 200 years ago now. In 1822, my ancestor went to Saxonia and he had an apprenticeship on the royal court in Saxony. And to make it short, he was quite good in his job, even in the earlier years. So he finished this apprenticeship with, I think, great success. He received a cutting of the Queen of the Night from the Royal Head Gardener. And so he went back home to Erfurt and he started running a nursery. And I think he, maybe a lot of people know, when you get in contact with cacti, you will stick on it, probably, quite sure. And so he did. And so he started the nursery, and quite soon he was specialized also in cacti. And so this was the reason he started doing a job with cacti, which was quite rare in this time. But the history is going back even further. We know there have been gardeners back to 1684 here in Erfurt.
Obviously, Queen of the Night was right there from the beginning. What are the main species or genera that you're growing now? And are you seeing particular demand for certain things from your customers?
Well, yeah, that's changing all the time. That's quite sure. When my grandfather, Walter Hager, he was very keen on Astrophytum, the star cactus. So he did his, he wanted to become a botanist, and in the golden 1920s, I think it's probably the same crazy time as we have right now. So he had time to do scientific work, and he chose the genus Astrophytum to do back crossing, which was the common scientific work to find out relationships between two species. From this time, we have a very huge collection of quite old Astrophytum stock plants. And of course, we have many others. So when I look back in history, you will find there are plants very common, and a few years later, the star is fading, and so the interest is going back. And another thing is coming up. So I think in this time we have a lot of interest in Hoya or in Epiphyllum or Epicactus hybrid. So the epiphytic growing cacti from the trees. So we find a different interest right now.
So if the epiphytes are on the rise, are there things now that are a lot less popular? What's not popular that you've kind of had to reduce your production on?
About 20 years ago, we found a big interest in plants which are covered by cytis, so endangered plants, cacti. So we tried to propagate a lot of those plants, and then I think people got interested because the prices were reasonable high. So many plants. I think it was the time of eBay was starting going through the market. And so we found a lot of private collectors propagating Areocarpus. And sooner or later, you could buy, I don't know, a lot of older plants on eBay. And so we had to decide what to do with our propagation. And so we decided to put all those propagated, freshly propagated plants in a smaller glasshouse, because when we would try to sell them, I was a bit afraid of flooding the market. And so, yeah, it's about 20 years ago. The plants had a good time to grow now. They look really beautiful. It was about eight years ago. Nobody wants to buy Areocarpus. And but I think there is a coming interest up right now, and I hope to have those plants back on the market.
Yeah, that's interesting. Areocarpus, I mean, they're I guess in a way, if you perhaps a bit less well known than something like Haworthia, but they're a similar kind of rosette cactus. The one that I keep seeing on Instagram is one, and I guess this is a cultivar called Godzilla, which is that a with the really sort of ruffly, I mean, like, I guess it looks like Godzilla is the idea. That one seems to be really popular on Instagram, I guess, because it looks so weird.
So that's we have always so if the main part of a genus is going common, you quite often you will find something new, a cultivar or a rare or a new discovered species. So it's not, and so nothing is gone forever, I think. So you have still some people which are working scientifically with their plants, and so I think there is still interest over the years, but I'm talking about the larger numbers of sales.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the crazes do come and go. Do you keep an eye on social media and what's going on in terms of what you're seeing trend-wise? Is that hard to keep on top of?
Yeah, that's right. So we got a lot of plants, especially from Asia, Thailand, and so they have amazing plants which I have never seen before. So they have, I don't know, red colored euphorbias, or yeah, Godzilla is one of it, and I think they have greenish or reddish plants of this also, of this cultivar, and there are many plants which will be rare or not coming to Europe, at least.
Let's talk about Hoya, because I know that you grow lots of Hoyas, and I know that they are something that is at the moment at the top of the wheel of fortune, if I can say. Lots of people want Hoyas. Has that been something you've rapidly expanded in the last couple of years?
We started back in, it must be about 2007. The story is also quite interesting. We got a contact from the son of a colleague of my grandfather, and from Netherlands. He was quite keen in Hoyas. So his father was a cactus gardener too. So this was the reason for the friendship with my grandfather. And he come back later with Hoya. And he, I don't know, I think he was around the world to collect and to discover Hoyas all over. And later he had to decide to close the nursery. And so he offered us to keep his collection. On this way, we had from one day to another a huge Hoya collection with a lot of rare stuff. To be honest, it's quite difficult for a cactus gardener to keep up with Hoyas, because usually they have a complete opposite way of cultivation, because they need wet and slightly shady, moist conditions in the glasshouse. So we have to water your plants, which is kind of horror for any cactus gardener. And so it was quite difficult for us to get used to this strange habit of treating plants.
And how many different Hoya species and cultivars roughly are you growing? Is it?
Well, I think it's about 160 currently. These are the plants we can propagate from. We have also a bunch of plants which are, we just keep in the hope to get a handful of cuttings sometime. So we have also some more problematic plant which doesn't really grow for us.
Yeah, well, I sympathize. I've got a couple of Hoyas which I just can't get to grips with how to grow, or how to get them to grow with any. They sort of put on a spurt of growth, and then that's it for another year. My Hoya obovata is one of these, and I got very excited when it put out two leaves in the springtime, and then I managed to damage one of them accidentally, which is annoying. And then since then it's just sat there, and I don't know what else I can do. It's amazing, because then some other Hoyas I've got, absolutely, they just sit there for a couple of years and then they suddenly go crazy. So who knows? I think Hoyas are wonderful plants, but sometimes they can be a bit of a mystery.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely.
And do you find that it's the, and I don't really like this word, but the splash Hoyas that are the most popular, the ones that have got kind of silvery markings and lots of variegation on them?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I look at plants with two eyes. I mean, one is the part which is kind of interesting for me, and the other one is what people are expect. And I think people are going mad about the splashed plants. And that's true, especially with Hoya.
I mean, oftentimes these plants are being sold as splash, which obviously is not a botanical, you know, it's not a taxonomic description. But is there any way, if you've got, say, I'm thinking of my Hoya Matilde, which is a hybrid but has sort of splashy leaves, is there any way that I can make it more splashy?
I think it's a sport. So it's like a variegation. There are people, there is a theory you could change this with over fertilization. But there are also studies which says it's not true. So I'd never tried to manipulate plants like this. So I'm not sure if there is a way. So I don't have any idea how to change in the one or another way.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I don't really want to mess up my Hoya Matilde by over-fertilizing it or experimenting too much. It's I'm not that bothered about how many silver splashes it has on it. But but I know that if I had, you know, endless room and time, I think I'd, you know, get some cuttings going and try different locations and feeding regimes. But I'm sure one of my listeners will be able to do that because they're endlessly inventive. But it is interesting to see how, you know, these trends change. I'm thinking at some point there might be a trend where somebody just wants a plain green leaf, you know. Maybe the tables will turn in a few years, but for the minute the variegation seems to be really, really popular. One of the questions I wanted to ask was about things that I used to be able to buy easily that you don't seem to be able to get so commonly. And I can't figure out why this is. So I'm thinking about some of the rat tail cacti species and things like Echinopsis camissarius, the peanut cactus. I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I seem to remember them being really quite common when I was a kid, but they don't seem to be now. Is that just lack of propagation material or is there some other reason?
No, I think it's lack of interest. So when you go back to the time where those plants were quite common and you could find them everywhere, I think it's a question. Most of the plants which are offered right now, so you just have to check the channels where the plants come from. And when you go to the supermarket or the garden center, so there are huge nurseries in, I don't know, large scale. It's 10,000 square meters of glass houses. And they maybe propagate on these areas maybe 5 or 20 different species of cacti. And so you have a very small number of species, but a huge number of output, which automatically reduces the availability of a wider range on the market. So this makes a cactus quite obvious. So you can see a large number of plants on every spot on the market. And so if there is a small nursery specialized in, let me say, propagating the peanut cactus, you won't be able to see it on the market because maybe they produce a lot of plants. Maybe they produce every year 10,000 plants, which was 20 years ago a big number. So they have to be compared with a number of 200 million or 2 billion other plants which are on the market. So you won't see them. It's just a question of the numbers. But they are around and there are still, of course, smaller nurseries which are specialized and produce a larger number of different species or genus. So there is in Italy a Panarotto cactus, for instance, and they're specialized in Echinopsis hybrids or peanut cactus. They have a wide range, and we have in our nursery. So it's quite funny. You ask just this for this plant. We got a collection from a hybridizer who died 3 years ago. And so he was also specialized in the peanut cactus, and he made a lot of really breathtaking hybrids, which coming on the market probably in the coming years.
Ooh, how exciting.
So, yes, sure. And I think there are around, but yeah, it's just find one drop of water in a river. It's quite difficult. Yeah, I think this is the reason.
That's a really good point. As you say, if you've got a huge scale, economy of scale of producing cacti, like, of course, they're going to produce millions of a particular species that works and that they can sell and that reaches a certain size. And so, yeah, you get less variation than a small grower who is just propagating on a much smaller scale. So yeah, that's a really interesting point. And I guess that's why it's great that we have got the smaller growers doing interesting breeding and doing cool stuff, because you know it's, of course, demand is there for us, so we need to have these huge growers, but also these specialists are doing some really cool things as well.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
When you drive the brand ranked number one in dependability by J.D. Power, you can stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see yourself behind the wheel of the brand ranked number one in dependability by J.D. Power. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Kia received the fewest reported problems among all brands in the J.D. Power 2022 U.S. Vehicle Dependability Study based on 2019 models. See jdpower.com/awards for 2022 details.
Would you like to stake a claim to your favorite cactus succulent species? Is there anything that you absolutely love but you can't understand why it's not more popular?
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, there are also always plants which, yeah, there is always a reason. I just think about Opuntia. So nobody really likes Opuntia because they're just spiny and they have these ugly, fine glochids which stay in your finger for a month or so, and you won't be able to remove it even with a pair of tweezers. And nobody really likes them, but they are fun. And I like to eat them, but most people stay as far as possible from those plants because they have had maybe a bad contact with them in earlier times, which I had in fact too. So there is a funny story. When I grew up as a kid, we have a pool in the nursery, which was used to collect water in case of fire. And when we were kids, we were allowed to have a bath in there when all the workers went home in the summer. But the problem is, on one side of this pool was the water, and on the other side was the bed with the Opuntia. And sometimes you jumped into the water, but I think one or two times I fell into the Opuntias, and it was a quite amazing afternoon then. getting an operation from my mother to get all the spines, the tiny glochids removed from the skin.
Wow. That sounds interesting.
Yes, but this is probably another way to get infected by cacti.
Yes, exactly. Very true. It's interesting on the Opuntia. I've just written a chapter of my book about Opuntia microdaisies and talking about all the different ways that people tried to remove the glochids. And just going back to your edible Opuntia point, are you eating the pads, the fruits? What part do you enjoy?
usually everything. I mean, once a year we have a cactus dinner, which is mainly made from the Opuntia pads. But to be honest, we don't produce them here anymore because we would probably have need one or two glass houses just to produce a lot of those pads. So we're buying them directly from Mexico. And of course, so there are quite, you can use them for every part. So it's a 5-course dinner, or at least a 5-course dinner. And so we need a lot of Opuntia pads. Can make a soup or a salad, or you can have them as vegetable with meat or fish. And of course, you have them as vegetable on their own. And we quite often we have them also for dessert. And of course, we also will have the tunas or the pitahayas, so the fruit of the queen of the night, were quite frequently used for the dinner too. And it's I'm always amazed how creative cooks can be if they are free to decide what to do.
How exciting to have a whole meal made from cacti. I think that sounds so yeah. cool. If you've got what pads with spines, is there a special way to remove the spines? What do you do about that?
Well, it's quite easy. You just take your sponge. It's just an ordinary kitchen sponge, and you just rub the spines from there. Areoles. If you have very big areoles, you can just use a sharp knife doing a cut and cutting off the areoles with the spines, and then you can just remove it with a towel, and that's it.
Oh, great.
That's
okay.
Quite easy.
Well, I've never seen them. Have I seen them for sale in this country? Maybe if I went to London, probably I would be able to get hold of them. I have had a meal made of cacti, which was at the Cactus World Live event that was held here in the UK a couple of years ago, pre-COVID, and it was delicious. So I'm excited to be able to try some more.
I'm quite sure I have seen Opuntias in Sainsbury's.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to have to go and check. look more closely.
But it's a few years ago.
In the vegetable aisles. More from Ulrich shortly, but now it's time for Question of the Week, which comes from Zoe. And Zoe is looking for some advice about a Thai constellation, Monstera, which Zoe says is about the same age as mine and from the same source. Yes, I think it probably is. So you're talking sort of, well, I think I got mine in September 2018. So where are we? However old that makes it. And Zoe sent a picture of her Thai. It does look about the same size as mine. I guess slightly more mature because Zoe has not chopped hers, whereas I have. Zoe says, I haven't taken any cuttings from it yet, but we've moved house and it's become unwieldy and hard to find a place in the house. Would it be a terrible time to take cuttings now? I think half the problem is that it's quite top heavy. It's not actively pushing out new leaves, but it is putting out a new aerial root. I don't want to lose those beautiful top leaves, but need to do what's best for the plant. Just not sure if that's cutting it now or waiting. Well, I have a lot of personal experience on this one. What I think I would do, Zoe, is I would air layer the top of the plant now, start doing that now, so that come spring, you can then cut just below where you've air layered it. That way you will have two plants then. You will have the top growth, which will have all the beautiful, really fenestrated mature leaves, and you'll have the plant below. And at that point, you can make a choice. You might want to put them both into one bigger pot, or you might want to have them in separate pots. But the plant below will bounce back very quickly. As you may remember, listeners, I've done this with both of my Thai constellations. So air layering with this kind of plant is really quite simple. If you were doing something like a Dracaena with a woody stem, I would recommend scoring the bark and all sorts. But with this plant, really, all you need to do is just get some Well, what would I use? Probably a clear plastic bag and some coir or some moss. And then you've just got to do the very awkward business of wrapping that package around a node where you've got some aerial roots coming out, ideally, and make sure it's damp, that substrate, whatever it is, the moss or the coir, wrap it round and secure it in place. The reason for the clear plastic is then you can see when the roots are growing. And within a few weeks, it should root quite vigorously into that little mass of substrate that you've provided. And once it's rooted really well, you can then just chop it off. So that should probably take you, Zoe, to roughly springtime. And then you can just cut off just below the place where you've propagated, where you've grown those extra new roots. Use a hacksaw or something like that, because it is quite, I can see on your plant, it's the same as mine. It's going to be about, well, it's going to be at least 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 centimeters across that stem in diameter. So get a clean hacksaw. I just sterilized mine by running it under naked flame of my gas hob. And then hack away below the rooted point. Remove the plant. You might need to trim a bit once you get it off if you haven't managed to get that cut exactly where you wanted it, but trim that down. Then you can just plant that into the soil. You could put it in water if you wanted, but I would probably just put it straight into soil if you've got that good root system going and the roots are, you know, reasonably extensive. They'll probably go absolutely nuts and sort of fill that container before you chop it off. Provided you've got that kind of root system going, then it can go straight into soil. And you'll find that spring will be a good point as the light gets longer, days get longer, for the base of the plant, which you've chopped, to regenerate with new leaves. And what you'll find will happen is that a shoot will come out just slightly to the side of the stem and send the plant off in a slightly different direction, and you will get new growth. And it's as easy as that. This is a really actually tough plant. If you've been growing it this well so far, Zoe, this will not be a problem for you. That is what I'd recommend doing, because that way you won't risk taking off that top part and any rot problems occurring at any point, particularly in the winter when growth might be slower. But yeah, that's what you need to do. I hope I've explained that well enough. I'm just trying to think if I've missed anything out in terms of my explanation. The other thing to say is you can buy these rooting balls, which are like plastic molds that go around the stem, and you can fill them with the substrate and they open up quite easily. I presume they come in quite large sizes, which is what you would need for this project, because obviously the stem's really thick. Personally, you know me, clear plastic bag from the recycling, bit of substrate, Bob's your uncle. But if you want to go down the more official route, then a rooting ball would work too. And that plant just wants to grow. So I have no doubt that it will do very nicely. And then it's up to you whether you want to, as I say, put them in together, give one away. If you put them in the pot together, obviously they're going to keep growing. But I would recommend this for anyone with a Monstera Deliciosa that is getting out of hand. Give it a chop. It really won't do any harm. And particularly if you air layer it first, you are on the road to success. I hope that helps, Zoe. And I will be answering the festive questions next week. I intend to have a glass of mulled wine by my side, and it will be basically unedited. I'm going to go for a sort of stream of consciousness approach. So that could be fun. And I have about, well, I think I have about 6 or 7 questions to answer on everything from Christmas cactus to Hippiastrum to Paperwhite Narcissi. So that should be fun. If you've got another question for On the Ledge, please do drop me a line on theledgepodcast@gmail.com, and I will do my damnedest to give you some form of answer. And now it's time to head back to our chat with Ulrich. A little bit about the Christmas period. Is this a big sales period for you? And what kind of thing, what cacti or succulents do people buy for Christmas?
Well, a Christmas cacti.
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, yes. How could I even? Of course. I don't know why I didn't think of that. I mean, and I guess, are they having a resurgence as well? I mean, they've always been popular, really. People have had them in, you know, one plant that's lasted for generations, presumably still really popular.
So Germans are a very serious person, all of them, and they love statistics. And I think it's quite interesting. Schlumbergera and Rhypsolidopsis is the only cactus which has an appearance in the German trade statistics. So the group of cacti are not of interest there. So the whole group doesn't exist in statistics, but Schlumbergera do. That's really amazing. So if you wanted to see the numbers of plants sold in Germany or even all over Europe, you can have a number of Schlumbergera, but no other cactus or even the group of cacti.
Interesting.
Other succulents. Yeah, it's quite funny. So they are sold in such big numbers, and I think it's interesting, especially because there are, I think, three nurseries in Europe producing those millions or billions of plants.
Only three
produce. Only three. Two in Denmark and one in Netherlands.
Wow, that is amazing. And, I mean, I guess that's a specialist thing that they just concentrate on that particular species. Wow.
Yes.
That's incredible. Well, I do love Christmas. I mean, I'm constantly seeing people asking the same question online, which is, do I have a Christmas cactus or a Thanksgiving cactus? And my answer is always kind of like, well, who knows really? Because they all seem to flower at different times. And they all, I mean, they've been so widely hybridized. I don't know if you can ever really, I mean, obviously the Easter cactus is a different species and is more distinct. But is there really a difference between, can you sort of firmly say, well, this is Christmas because it...
Yes.
Okay, give me the chapter and verse, because I've never quite got to grips with this.
It's quite easy. So you have, you must help me with a name, but so you have a radial flower. Is it right? Radial?
Radial, yeah.
It's a circle. So the flower, when you cut the flower in half, it doesn't matter where you cut, you will always have two identical parts of halves. This is Easter cactus. This is Rhypsolidopsis. And if you have a symmetrical flower, so which is like orchids, if you cut an orchid flower in half, you have one line where you can cut it to find two identical parts. It's symmetrical.
So that's the Christmas cactus we're talking about now that is symmetrical?
Exactly.
Then we've got Thanksgiving. This is the one that gets me.
The problem is those plants love to flower. So they take nearly every celebration to put out new flowers. So it's quite common to have the Christmas cacti also flowering on Easter. And of course, they might be able to flower also on Thanksgiving. So this is the reason why they flower. So it's quite difficult to get hold of them just on the day of their flower. This is not a secure identification. It's quite difficult. So, but the flowers, when you just imagine to cut the flowers in half, you can, it's quite easy to identify them.
And let's just talk about another aspect of Christmas, which is something my listeners are constantly complaining about. And I don't know whether you want to put the other side of the argument here or whether you'll agree, but lots of listeners send me horrified messages and photos of spray painted succulents and cacti covered in glitter at Christmas time, and cacti that have been dressed as Santa with Google eyes and a hat. And this causes great horror to my listeners.
Yes.
What's your take on it?
I think we should also not forget the cactus who's gluing in the dark.
Yes. Yes. I got sent one of those a few years ago.
I don't like it.
Hooray! Because, I'm so relieved.
It's, it's really easy. I mean, it's like if you have we started with not liking having straw flowers, so artificial flowers on the cacti. Yep. And so there you had a minor damage on the plant, which quite often, if you didn't remove the spines from the plant, took them to death. And yeah, and covering a plant with color or spray or whatever, so it will just block out every light and the plant will die. It's quite easy, and this is not the thing I want to do with my plants. So I don't like it.
What are the rationales that the people doing this are using? Is it that they can just make more money because it sells for more?
No, I think it's just a thing. So probably no serious cactus lover will buy a plant which is covered in glitter, because he's usually interested in the plant and not in the glitter.
Yeah.
Which he had to remove to save the plant. So those plants will be bought by people which are not interested in the plants. And it's just a cover. So they will throw the plant away after Christmas is gone, and that's it. And I think they are produced. So I know of some nurseries which are producing those plants, and they just throw it on the market and that's gone. So it's probably not the same customer who is interested in house plants, but it's a kind of, yeah, like, I don't know, a wooden Christmas thing for the ledge, or yeah, you know, it's. I don't think a serious plant person would buy a thing like this.
You know, a lot of people buy those cacti with the fake flowers on them, really believing that the plant is in flower, and it's kind of tragic. And it happens with other plants as well, like the Strelitzia is often sold with a plastic flower in it, which makes me laugh. The bird of paradise.
Oh, really?
Yes, I've seen that.
I haven't seen that.
They literally, it's like a steak, and it goes into the pot, and it's you know, like, I don't know whether people believe it's real, or I suppose that it's showing what it's going to do, but it just seems like a terrible waste of plastic to me.
I got calls and people asking me, well, my cactus is flowering, but it's dead. So the plant was rotten, but they still had the wide open flower. And I asked, how long for is the plant flowering? Well, about 10 years.
Yes, and it's not good, is it? It's not
funny
good.
Moments.
Yeah. And you have your own podcast. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, yes, we have a lot of visitors here, and they like to walking around in the nursery and getting stories told about the plants or kind of history and things like this. And so I decided, so I have to tell a lot of stories, and also my parents and my sister. And then I came across the idea of, well, not everybody is able to come here, but maybe I can go out to tell them outside. So and 2 or 3 years ago, interest in podcasts were rising. And I said, well, that's probably a good idea to bring the stories to the people instead of getting the people here. And it was just a few months before COVID. And so it was quite a good idea. And I love it to tell people stories. But currently, you know, I'm German, thinking of being too serious and trying to be too scientific. So this is one of the reasons why I love your podcast, because it's always a thing of you can laugh about it, and it's really entertaining. And I Which is not so easy for us Germans to be like this.
I think you're doing yourself a disservice there. I mean, I'm so excited that podcasts are opening up more and more in the world of houseplants and different niches, which is absolutely brilliant. And I will put a link in the show notes to your podcast. Do you have anything you can tell us about that you're working on that you think might be the next big thing?
You mentioned a minute before red-tailed cacti. And I think there is a growing interest. So I got some signals from the United States. So there are some people who are interested and who are trying to collect more hybrids, and probably there is something coming up. And my idea is coming from we just facing an exploding demand on Epiphyllum hybrids or Epicactus hybrids. We have so many people, especially originated from Asia, which are buying Epicactus hybrids like mad. The first time I realized we have a quarter of our sales area completely emptied and we had no plants to refill. And this was a thing I was never faced. So probably the nursery was never faced like this. So we had nothing to fill in this space. And this was really new to us. And I had, you can believe me, I had several sleepless nights how to go on with this, how to keep with this.
Because you just sold out completely of those plants?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And there's nobody who you could buy new plants or even cuttings from.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's an interesting one to think about for the future. And I'm sure you're right that that's on the rise. It's been really fascinating to chat to you, and it's so interesting to hear your perspective as a German cactus nursery. And I love talking to people all around the world. So it's a real treat to talk to you. And one day I hope to come and visit and be able to enjoy actually seeing some of your incredible collection and, hopefully not diving into a bed of Opuntias in the process.
Well, no, I don't think so. It's quite safe right now, yeah.
Thanks so much to Ulrich for joining me this week. What a delight. And do check out the show notes as ever for pictures of Kaktinhage Nursery and links to Ulrich's podcast and more. That's all for this week's show. I shall see you next Friday. I'm off to eat my body weight in mince pies. Take care. Bye. The music you heard in this episode was Roll Jordan Roll by the Joy Drops, The Road We Used to Travel When We Were Young by Komiku, and I Snossed I Lost by Dr. Turtle. All tracks are licensed under Creative Commons. Visit the show notes for details.